Today I want to express appreciation for Srila Prabhupada, which I'm going to set in a certain context. This starts with a book review I read in the ISKCON Communications Journal, which I think everyone knows is put out by Shona Gurishi. So it was a book review of a book by Tripurari, who is our godbrother, but who left ISKCON and is part of a Gaudiya Math. And I found it very interesting. And as the book reviewer says, it was not only the subject, but the tone of the essay. It was not in a fighting mode, but in a mood of offering suggestion. So it's more like a booklet. It's a short book, and it discusses Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati mostly, and how during his time he was a revolutionary. We've all heard that in different ways, how he was revolutionary. But one way he was revolutionary, and meaning that he was different than his contemporaries in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, even different than his father, was that he didn't emphasize the giving of Siddha Pranali initiation. Now, I say this is a... this topic is controversial, that he's differing from his contemporaries. But this is a controversy that I think many devotees in ISKCON are not even aware of. We have enough controversies as it is with the Ritvik controversy, Gurukul controversy, so on and so forth. But there's no end to them. So what is Siddha Pranali? I'll ask this group here, someone to tell me, what is Siddha Pranali Diksha? What? Yeah, exactly. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati didn't give this, and it's not even known that he ever received it. And the reason he didn't give it is he thought people were not qualified. The main qualification for this is a person's intense desire to have it and to practice it. So, who's to judge whether somebody has that or not? The guru, and if the guru himself doesn't actually know his position, then he certainly won't be qualified. Or even if he does, he would have to be very conservative or careful, because mostly this assigning of eternal relationship has to do with Gopi Bhav, because that's our sampradaya. That's what Lord Chaitanya is mostly involved in. Therefore, if somebody started thinking in terms like that of entering into Radha and Krishna's amorous pastimes while he still had material sex ambitions, it would be disastrous for him personally, and also he'd cast ill repute on the movement of Lord Chaitanya. And that's what happened at that time in history, that people respectable people who weren't in the movement, if they heard about this Gaudiya movement, they thought, oh, that's just an excuse for sex life. But they're just cheating, having so-called rasa dance, and men and women just enjoying illicit sex. We can hardly imagine that reputation to the movement, but that's what it had. So he was very, very strict. He didn't give it at all. But there are lines or sampradayas in which this is given, and so there's a disagreement between the two. I don't want to get into this too much detail because all of this is a setting for what I want to do after this. So I'll keep my details to a minimum. So anyway, it was an interesting book review, and I got the booklet, and it's called Sri Guru Parampara. And he's basically justifying the activities of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and glorifying him. At one point he says that at the mention of his name, people should bow their heads because all over the world there are, in every town and village, there are people who have come to Lord Chaitanya's movement through his teachings. He should not be an object of criticism. So, but there may be some idea by people who think he did the wrong thing to say that, he just emphasized this evangelizing or preaching, getting members, and therefore he doesn't know the inner mood of the teachings, which some see as coming down from Bhaktivinoda Thakur through his other son, Lalit Prasad, or through some other Gaudiya lines. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati doesn't agree with this, or his followers. Rather, they say that the nature, the real meaning of the inner mood is also connected to the preaching movement. So it actually happened in history that after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati passed away, at least a couple of his important disciples, they turned against him and made propaganda that if you were initiated by him, your spiritual life isn't complete. You have to get initiated in the Siddha Pranali line, because Gobata summed it up. But the one thing he didn't mention is that to get that, requires a formal initiation. It can't be just a Shiksha Guru. You have to be formally initiated, and you have to have it on a bona fide piece of paper even that shows my guru was so-and-so, and his spiritual form is this. This is how old she is as a Gopi Manjari. This is the color of her skin. This is the dress that she wears. There are 11 different activities that you have, and every day you practice them. And they even allow that. I remember talking in 1991 to one of these followers. He was an initiated of Prabhupada, and he had left. He lives near Mayapur. And he was very openly saying that you don't have to be qualified. You can still have material lust, but if you can start and start practicing this, and it will help you to get out of this material condition. So, what was I saying? Well, Bhaktisiddhanta broke with this tradition and followed a tradition, however, that predated this. In other words, he follows the tradition of the scriptures and the six Goswamis. And the six Goswamis never mentioned in their writing Siddha Pranali. And neither does Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that he's not interested in Braja Bhakti, but that it is available in by chanting the holy name. And he emphasizes kirtan rather than trying the practice of smaranam, where somebody sits in silence and tries to practice remembering Krishna and what he's doing in his relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. That requires great mental concentration. Whereas kirtan purifies you to go to that further stage. I was particularly interested in the chapter where he describes the broad application of kirtan. Let's see if I can find that. Yeah, I'll read from the book. Bhaktisiddhanta's idea of kirtan was dynamic, extending to include the modern world of technology in its reach. He included writing in his understanding of kirtan, wherein considerable mental concentration is required. To preach and propagate in such kirtan was, in his estimation, the most powerful means for subjugating the mind, giving rise to internal meditation upon the actual lila. In contrast, to sit in the jungle and practice lila smaranam is no easy task. Without a pure heart, one's mind is likely to prevail rather than the lila. Comparatively, how mentally consuming is the task of propagating the esoteric theology of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in modern language to a world under the influence of an entirely different meta-narrative. In simple language, what he's saying there, especially toward the end, is it's very purifying and intense work to think, as Prabhupada was always doing, how to present Krishna consciousness to these people. Looks like Prabhupada's followers are thinking, how can we present it in China? How can we present it in Russia? How can we present it in America? And he said, in places where there's an entirely different culture or different philosophy or way of looking at something. So the people practicing Lila Smaranam, they're in the jungle thinking, now Radha and Krishna, they're going off alone, and but my service is to bring them this garland, which my Gopi Manjari Senior has given to me to bring. Is he going to be able to keep thinking like that, or is he going to start again thinking something else in the mind? But compare that to the concentration of the preacher, he's saying, who is working under his spiritual master to spread Krishna consciousness. Then in his conclusion, sometimes he talks simultaneously about ISKCON and other Gaudiya Maths coming from Bhaktisiddhanta, how we're all one against this idea of any criticism of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And only once, he sees how ISKCON is set apart from them. And I'll read that a little bit. The dominant institution that his mission gave forth to is the formal mission of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ISKCON. Bhaktivedanta Swami considered himself a strict follower of Bhaktisiddhanta. Accordingly, he boldly preached in the Western world with tremendous success. Today, 21 years after his departure from the world, his mission boasts thousands of followers. ISKCON has more facility and does more to propagate the precepts of Gaudiya Vaishnavism than any other institution, and perhaps more so than all of other similar missions combined. Yet it suffers from a weakness. It is largely uninformed with regard to its Raganuga heritage. In this, I do not fault its founder, but his followers, who are often more concerned with distributing his books than they were with reading them. It's ironic that he says this. Prabhupada called him the incarnation of book distribution. And he was responsible, I think he even says it with a little tongue-in-cheek, because he was responsible for drawing people away, in one sense, from a scholarly approach to the books, and just seeing the books as items to get into some soldier's hands and get $25 out of his pocket. But he certainly did that other kind of smarnam that's mentioned, thinking with great courage and putting his body on the line, how can I get this person to take a book? The valid stress of Bhaktisiddhanta on the need for qualification to tread the path of Raganuga was echoed and even magnified appropriately by his disciple, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to his fledgling Western following. So Prabhupada, he's saying, is not only an exact follower, but he put that stress even tighter, coming and facing the Americans and Europeans and seeing what he could do or what he couldn't do to teach the esoteric Krishna consciousness. So too did Bhaktivedanta Swami stress kirtan, employing the world of modern technology in its outreach, thus paving the road for his disciples' natural progress. And then he says some typical things that we all are aware of, that the yukta vairagya principle can be overdone, and you can get more caught up in the computers than in spiritual life. One's kirtan can become more musical than mystical. Preaching ego effacement can be tinged with self-promotion, and so on and so forth. So he certainly can take that as good advice. He also says that devotees in ISKCON should be more aware and have more friendly relationships with the other lines of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now, I want to present a number of things in a sense, a kind of discovery by reading this stuff as a new appreciation for Prabhupada and how he actually did embody this position of telling us that and urging us to go to Goloka Vrindavan, and at the same time emphasizing that it's not a cheap thing. And for that, I'm going to draw from Prabhupada's different references. But before I do that, I want to ask now for any questions about what I presented. I presented it rather fast and a little sketchily, skipping here and there, and not with complete grasp of the material myself. But if you have any questions, so then the rest of my talk will be easier for you. You can let me know. Yeah.
I have a question. I come across some devotees, and you know, they're in the other lines, you know, the Gaudiya Math. I find I'm a little weird to get too involved with them. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, is that just fanatical, or you know, because sometimes they, being friends with them, they cause me to almost agree and criticize things which I feel I shouldn't, you know. And then if I get more friendly with them, then I'm subtly and gradually getting more removed then from maybe mainline ISKCON. I just wondered, or can we draw the line, or
Yeah, well, it's a changing thing. Exactly what it is now will change.
So at the other point was I was thinking, you know, loyalty to Prabhupada's mood and mission and so on and so forth, but then sometimes the people seem okay. It's so complex, it seems. I just wondered, is there a party line on it, or
Yeah, there is a party line. The GBC has resolutions that you should not accept anybody outside ISKCON as a Shiksha Guru. That's laid down pretty carefully. Like my disciples, some of them, sometimes with surprise, I suddenly get a letter and somebody says that, mostly with Narayan Maharaj, and that they've taken, well, some have taken, you know, they've mostly been Shiksha Guru. He said there was no need to change the name, and you still be respectful towards Sadhguru Maharaj. But it's like, so what do? I write back very tactfully and say, you know, ISKCON has laws about this. And I sort of leave the implication to them, especially when they've already gone ahead and done it. I don't tell them you did a wrong thing, and then they just take it to their group and say, see how narrow-minded he is. But when people do it, they themselves, they break the relationship, not that somebody has to break it for them so much. But I really don't want to get into this, your question, so much. It's not the question I asked. Like, this was sort of technical material I covered, and if it's what you asked for is very important, but it's sort of not my topic, or at least at this time in the presentation. Did everyone understand about Siddha Pranali and the different lines and the requirements for different disciples? and so on and so forth. Like what Gobad was asking about, he was asking about fellow followers of Bhaktisiddhanta. So there are also Gaudiya Vaishnavas who don't even accept him. And there are some who don't even accept Bhaktivinoda. I had at least one disciple I gave initiation to. She went to India and come back. Just doesn't want any part. She got reinitiated, and her Gaudiya line has no connection with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and have all these criticisms of him and Bhaktisiddhanta. So she said, "But I know you're a follower of the truth, so I would still like to discuss these things with you. And if you like, I'll send you some of the books or something, trying to convert me." And I wrote back that I will correspond with you, but I don't want to hear you criticizing Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So then she didn't write back anymore. But I mean, some of us are hardly even aware of these groups. They're sometimes called collectively the Radhakund Babaji's, and some of them have followed what Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples did, who in a sense rejected him and went and got, because they felt Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he emphasizes Shiksha Guru line, and so if you were initiated by him, you're not really initiated. You don't have a proper connection. You have to get reinitiated, and then you'll be able to enter into this Siddha Pranali given by a bona fide guru in that line. But we don't care for that that criticism. Yes?
I was just curious, that Siddha Pranali, that's actually kind of saying that you can have sex that can purify it, is that it?
No. That's a misuse of Siddha Pranali. Yeah. Prabhupada, I will read that a little later, where he refers to so-called Siddha Pranali. Yes? Apparently the history is Vrakeshwara Pandit did it, and he gave it to a guru named Gopal Guru, and he gave it to a guru named Dhyana something, I can't remember right now, and they're mentioned all by in Jiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So strictly speaking, Lord Chaitanya didn't teach it either. They certainly taught, you know, a deeply enriched Bhaja Bhakti, but not a process where the person is given all these 11 things to practice a meditation. But it was by these gurus slightly after Lord Chaitanya, and Bhaktivinoda speaks of them with great respect.
Technically, it wasn't like part of the core teaching. It was like more like an extension.
Yeah. All right. Let me go on then. First, I'll read about Prabhupada using that very phrase, Siddha Pranali, as Lawrence was saying. What does it mean? Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion, he's talking about Raganuga and how Rupa Goswami says you should live in Vrindavan, or if you can't go there, think of being in Vrindavan. And not only that, but according to your inclination, follow a certain resident of Vrindavan. And that meditation, simply, that's what Raganuga is, to follow a resident of Vrindavan in the same rasa as you. But of course, how are you going to know that? In this connection, we should be careful about the so-called Siddha Pranali. The Siddha Pranali process is followed by a class of men who are not very authorized and who have manufactured their own way of devotional service. They imagine that they have become associates of the Lord simply by thinking of themselves like that. This external behavior is not at all according to the regular principles. The so-called Siddha Pranali process is followed by the Prakriti Sahajiya, a pseudo-sect of so-called Vaishnavas. Now, a criticism we sometimes hear toward Prabhupada by really uninformed people, maybe some immature followers of Narayan Maharaj, although you would never hear it from him, or some other people like that, is that Prabhupada didn't teach everything. He didn't teach Raganuga, and he just taught Vaidhi Bhakti, practice Krishna consciousness by the rules and regulations, work hard, and to spread Krishna consciousness, and everything will happen automatically. But that's what devotees are told, but they don't really get the nectar. And so they would have to go to another guru, which is just the same thing as those persons did who left Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. They may say, well, no, we don't think you need Siddha Pranali, but you need at least to go to somebody else besides Prabhupada, because he's not teaching Raganuga, because the ISKCON followers weren't ready for it. But that's not a fact. Just as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is saying, if you chant the holy names, and if you chant your Gayatri mantras, and work hard, and become pure and moral, then you will have all access to Braja Bhakti. It will be revealed to you. So you don't need this Siddha Pranali. You can go all the way back to Godhead. So actually, these are the different evidences I'm presenting from Prabhupada now, which are meant to show that Prabhupada gave us everything we need to go back to Godhead, but at the same time, he was very strict that it can't be done cheaply. And cheaply means you're not even a moral person. Like the four rules, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. If you say, well, I can't follow all of them, but I want to get all the nectar. You can't get the nectar until you are very morally fixed. So many times somebody would bring up something like Raganuga or something, and as soon as Prabhupada would hear it, he would tend to get heavy about, you have to be liberated before you talk about that. And so-called sahajiya, and this is what we might say the most wonderful thing of all the things about Prabhupada. There are different ways of expressing appreciation for him. I remember recently reading a Vyas Puja homage a godbrother wrote. He said, the thing I most appreciate about Prabhupada is that he had compassion to save the fallen. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, that's a wonderful expression of appreciation for Prabhupada. I couldn't think of a better one. But actually, to get more specific and deeper would be to say more. Because what does it mean to save the fallen? Does it mean just to lift them up to the moral platform, or that they can go to Vaikuntha or the heavenly planet? But no. The really wonderful thing about Prabhupada is that he's giving us full access to enter the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And at the same time, he's such a wonderful teacher that, unlike other teachers, he's not saying, yeah, it's pretty easy, it's pretty cheap, you can just sit and we'll talk about rasa dance all the time, and we'll talk about thinking about the manjaris and so forth. He was very strict, and very strict in the behavior of his disciples. So that can perhaps be the most wonderful thing about Prabhupada. And once I started thinking like this, then almost all the references, they were just coming in different ways to me, just on this same point. And here's another one at the end of the Krishna book, where this is sheer purport. It's not really... the Krishna book is mostly translating, but sometimes Prabhupada writes purport. So in the end of the book, he's saying, the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, are so powerful that simply by hearing, reading, and memorizing this book, Krishna, one is sure to be transferred to the spiritual world, which is ordinarily very difficult to achieve. The description of the pastimes of Lord Krishna is so attractive that it automatically gives us an impetus to study repeatedly. So we shouldn't believe, we shouldn't have any doubt that Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta are not giving us this. I mentioned I had one disciple who did this, was also a god brother, who was very scholarly, a Sanskrit worker, and he went and talked one day with one of the Radhakund Babaji's, and they said, well, Bhakti Siddhanta is not bona fide. And he just believed it all. And gave up his reverence and his connection for Prabhupada and the Sampradaya. So the fact is here that just by reading the Krishna book, you can gain that greed to want to go very badly to the spiritual world. And you know to do that, you have to give up all sinful activities. The greed is approved. There's at the end of this little book, there's a there's an essay by Bhakti Siddhanta, and he says one must not make the mistake of thinking that anartha nivritti is the prayojana. In other words, getting rid of your unwanted habits, that's not the goal. Do not think that the Astakaliya Lila Smarana is the property of the Sahajiyas. Actually, it is our affair. It has to be retrieved from the hands of the Sahajiyas. So it's not that we're teaching, you know, not teaching about the gopis, but we're teaching it with qualification. In India, it is still a practice that many advanced transcendentalists give up their family lives and go to Vrindavan to live there alone and completely engage in hearing and chanting the holy pastimes of the Lord. This system is recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam, and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan followed it. But at the present moment, many karmis and pseudo-devotees have overcrowded the holy place of Vrindavan just to imitate this process recommended by Sukadeva Goswami. It is said that many kings and emperors formerly went to the forest for this purpose. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur does not recommend that one take up this solitary life in Vrindavan prematurely. One who prematurely goes to Vrindavan to live in pursuance of the instructions of Sukadeva Goswami again falls victim to Maya even while residing in Vrindavan. Vrindavan can be a dangerous place. And when Prabhupada started New Vrindavan in West Virginia, United States, he encouraged the devotees that it was like Vrindavan. And when they wrote and asked him, he said, it is even better than Vrindavan. He said, there are no Mayavadis here. And at the end of this talk by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, back in the, when was it, 1932, he says, we have heard the last instructions from our Sri Gurudev. He said, living in Radhakund would be pleasant if you can deliver it from the hands of 11 immoral men. Now, perhaps 11 has increased to 108. That was 1932, must be increased even more. Okay, that's from the Krishna book. And now, I just got in the mail the latest Among Friends. Now I read it for corrections, and you know there's that one section, Memorable Quotes, which is taken from a notebook of mine. And so the editor, he just takes two out for each issue of Among Friends, and these are the latest two. And they're both on this theme, one from the Bhagavatam, 8th Canto. By mental speculation, one can understand that one is not the body, but spirit-soul. But unless one engages in devotional service, the real purpose of life is never fulfilled. The real purpose of life is to go home, back to Godhead, and live with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dance with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and eat with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are different items of ananda, spiritual happiness, and spiritual variegatedness. And the other quote from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, page 102, although he has innumerable pastimes, the most important is that of Krishna in human form, frolicking in Vrindavan, dancing with the gopis, playing with the Pandavas on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and playing in Mathura and Dwarka. Of his most important pastimes in human form, the most important are those pastimes in which he appears as a cowherd boy, a newly grown youth who plays a flute. It is to be understood that a mere partial manifestation of his pastimes in Goloka, Mathura, and Dwarka can overflood the whole universe with love of Godhead. Every living entity can be attracted by the beautiful qualities of Krishna. Now, I call another witness to the stand. Prabhupada, sound vibration. This is a quote where Prabhupada is he's saying what the Krishna consciousness movement is and how it's giving everyone a chance. So this is a very generous movement. So often we may cite the generosity of this movement, that we're giving food to people. We do that especially when, for public relations, if somebody thinks ill of us, we say, well, we're not a bad group. We give out a lot of food to the homeless people. And what else do we do? There's not much good that we do that they can relate to. We talk about Krishna and Vrindavan. Well, what the hell is that? But actually, what the Krishna consciousness movement is doing that's wonderful is that giving people the open door to this Krishna in Vrindavan. So here, you get a good feeling of that. Oh, okay.
Or Krishna is dancing with other's wife according to material calculation. This is not allowed. You cannot dance with other's wife. Not in your country, but there is Vedic civilization. But Krishna did it. Although the gopis came to dance with him, captivated by his beauty, but they become purified. Punnasamanakitam. If simply by hearing about Krishna one becomes pious, how they become pious simply by dancing with Krishna? This is the theory. Not that Krishna wanted some young girl to dance with. He can create millions of young girls immediately. But they are devotees. They wanted to dance with Krishna. Might be captivated by his beauty. But they wanted Krishna, Krishna gave them chance. All right, come on, dance. And be beautiful. Just try to understand. Just simply by hearing about Krishna, one becomes beautiful. And what to speak of persons who are dancing with Krishna. Are these opportunities there? You can dance with Krishna, you can play with Krishna, you can talk with Krishna. So our Krishna consciousness movement is giving this chance to everyone. Everyone, without any discrimination. So, how it is purified?
See, it's not just a little bit of God consciousness that we're... I have another one. It's not just a little bit of God consciousness that the movement is giving into a few people, but it's the topmost thing and to everybody. But no nonsense. You can't be a nonsense person and get this. Now I'm going to play another tape. And, you know, Prabhupada is, in teaching these things, he says it's not to be attained by any magical methods or showing of ecstasy. But nevertheless, sometimes Prabhupada did, even in a public lecture, fall into a kind of ecstasy where he couldn't speak for a while. And I'm playing a lecture like that. And it's right on the point where he's talking about this relationship of Krishna and the pure devotees. In a sense, this is the silence speaks louder than any words. And then at the end of the silence, the devotees, he says something like chant.
For asking, sir. They think that we shall create our own.
Well, in context, he's talking about how people go to God for material things, and that's good. And then the next thing he'll say is even better than that.
But those who are pious, even though asking something from God, they are pious. Because they have come to God. So, these people, those who are coming to the temple for some material amelioration, they are pious. But those who are not coming, they are duskritina, murha, narathama. That is the description. But devotee means he does not ask anything from God. He simply wants to give. That is good. Just like gopis, they never ask anything from Krishna.
I hope your appreciation is enriched by reading these materials of the book review and the book itself. I found I gained in my appreciation for Prabhupada himself in following these different arguments and controversies, seeing how you say such a strict follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and so you should be better acquainted with this also. Sometimes we go to India and somebody will say, you say that you're a Brahmin. They say, oh, you can't be a Brahmin. You were not born in a Brahmin family. Maybe next birth you could be born in a Brahmin family. And then we can argue because we know the arguments. But in a similar way, somebody could say, oh, you are ISKCON. Well, you're not getting the bhava. Someone was telling me, I think there was a Sahajiya group, they have a temple next to Mayapur, and they say, we stay up all night singing and crying. What was it you told me that?
Yeah.
So they were boasting that we stay up all night crying and calling out to Radha and Krishna. So if they say like that, and you, if Swami, you Prabhupada Swami book, you just selling books and running around and everything, you don't have the bhava. And that's because you're not this or you're not that. So you should be able to say, look, we're chanting the holy names, and then give all evidences of the power of the holy name to clear the heart and how the chanting can mean not only chanting Hare Krishna, but Sankirtan of glorifying Krishna in many ways. And this gives us full access to Braja Bhakti. And so forth. Don't feel that you're on shaky ground. Any more questions or comments? Yeah.
I have two questions. One is, you were were talking about previously about that this an ISKCON GBC resolution that we cannot go to Shiksha Guru outside of ISKCON. Now, but there is still, at least in my mind, kind of an understanding that in order to, maybe it's a wrong understanding, if you can correct me, in order to achieve to the full extent of Braja Bhakti, you have to hear from a Shiksha Guru on that topic. Now, it may not be Shiksha Guru outside of ISKCON, it may be Shiksha Guru within ISKCON, but to specifically concentrate on hearing about Braja Leela in order to be more fixed on that. At a certain stage, of course, of purification, that will purify you, as well as like gopis would come to Krishna for purification, as Prabhupada said. And the second question would be...
Well, let me stay with that one first. first of all, you have Shiva Ram Maharaj's book, Shiksha Guru, which starts on the premise that all gurus are Shiksha Gurus. So you have to be careful how you use that word. The Lord is a Shiksha Guru. Your Diksha Guru, he ought to continue to be a Shiksha Guru in your life after he gave you the initiation. Not that he gave you initiation and he's not your teacher anymore. But you have the Lord in your heart, according to how pure you are. Then you have Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. So it may be that you can get the Braja Bhakti from them. Not that it has to be another person other than them. Let's see, there were a couple of things Chaparaya Maharaj said that were nice about Bhakti Siddhanta in this regard, and partly answering your question. Their interest in a particular spiritual identity must come through a purified heart in Nam Bhajan and not from the force of their imagination. Although internal practices in the stage of Ruchi are natural rather than forced, further shiksha in this stage is at least helpful. In contrast to the practices that Bhakti Siddhanta criticized, his methodology has been characterized by the phrase, "Don't try to see God, but act in such a way that God will see you." By encouraging his disciples to serve in his dynamic conception of kirtan, and here's a phrase I like, he promised them that Krishna would not ignore them. Indeed, they would become qualified to tread the path of Raganuga Bhakti and do so successfully while bringing dignity to the doctrine of Sri Chaitanya the world over, a world that at that time equated godliness with morality. So, I get that impression that that Srila Prabhupada is my spiritual master, and now he's not present for me to say, Prabhupada, I've been following and reading for 30 years. Could you tell me some of the things that you haven't told yet? I can't ask him that. Or could you awaken in me? How can I have awakened in me more greed for wanting to know it? I can't write him a letter or talk in that way. But I think that all these things are possible, that when I'm ready, it will come to me. The New Agers, they have a phrase, when the student is ready, the disciple will... No, when the student is ready, the guru will appear. So we can adapt that when the disciple is ready, the Braja Bhakti will appear, or the eternal nature that he has will appear. And how strange, how farcical it is before that to be told, you know, your name is such and such, your complexion is such and such, you're 11... and a half years old, your job is to do this. Now every day you meditate on that. And they have two versions of it. One is that you try it for a while, then you come back and you say, it didn't work. I just couldn't feel like it was mine. I said, all right, let's try something else. According to psychophysical nature, it may be changed. And another method where it's not assigned at all, but it's revealed. These are sacred things. And so your question is, the first question, was, don't you really have to have a Shiksha Guru? I know there are devotees in ISKCON who think like that. They're thinking, and rightly, that Raga Nuga discussion is very rare among devotees in ISKCON. They're so paranoid or afraid of it. As soon as you talk about it, someone says, Sahajya, where we should get out and preach your Sahajya. So I don't, but I have a taste for this. So if I could find some Shiksha Guru, and if I could just do it privately without too many people knowing it so I don't get in trouble, I would like to do that. But when I hear that, you think in one sense it would be nice, but Krishna would not ignore them, he says in his book. Bhakti Siddhanta assured the followers that Krishna would not ignore them. That we think, well, I'll try to do things that will increase my greed, like deity worship of Radha and Krishna, hearing the pastimes that bring my attention. Now, on this page that I read about the Siddha Pranali, where Prabhupada criticizes it, the next paragraph he talks about the 9 kinds of devotional service, and he says one would emphasize one or another according to your taste. It's interesting that he puts it there, that this is almost similar to being told what your eternal relationship is that you yourself will be inclined more towards one or the other of the 9 practices of bhakti. And if you really get into Prabhupada's books, like this, and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Nectar Devotion, you're going to become a devotee of Krishna in Vrindavan, because that's what he's really stressing. What's your second question?
Well, it's probably a little bit short. It's because, you know, probably those who would hear you talking about Tipurari Maharaj would want to ask you, because Tipurari Maharaj is famous that he would present a point of view that Prabhupada is actually in a Sakya Ras, not in a Madhurya Ras, is Krishna. And followers of Narayan Maharaj would argue that, well, we have our own perspective on that. And so, in this sense, did it matter at all what Guru's Rasa is, or who is Krishna, or it's something that if he doesn't reveal, we shouldn't even argue about?
There's a letter that Prabhupada wrote to our deceased godbrother Upendra that touches on this. He asked that exact question way back 1968 or something. And Prabhupada, in giving the answer, he gave an example of a teacher in a school, like a primary school, and the teacher's specialization might be mathematics, but he could also teach something that wasn't his specialization or his heart's desire of what he really liked, but he had to teach all these other subjects, and he could. But he was a master of one, or especially fond of one. He gave that example, which seems to indicate, especially the preliminary stages, he can bring them up. And then if he was Sakya Ras and they were Madhurya Ras, then they would go their way. Only at that time when they would go to Krishna. So it's not, if he's a pure devotee, that's the main thing, and he can stimulate my surrender to Krishna. And especially, we would say, he's not just a devotee of, although it wouldn't matter, even if he's a devotee of Lakshmi Narayan, he could still help me very much, I'm so fallen. But we know that Prabhupada is a follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and a follower. Oh, I was answering your question theoretically, but specifically as far as Prabhupada is concerned, he's certainly a devotee of Krishna in Vrindavan. That's for sure. I wrote a chapter in my book, Prabhupada Appreciation, where I just mainly concluded that Prabhupada was very dear to Krishna, was the phrase I used. And I discussed other things, I forget exactly how I did it, but I think I said some devotees might say that Prabhupada is in the Sakya rasa or is in this rasa, and some say he's this, but one thing is very clear to us, that he's very dear to Krishna. And there's no end to how Krishna appreciates Srila Prabhupada for what he did in this world. And I was happy and even enthusiastic to get kind of a new insight that how Prabhupada is stimulating and pushing us to become greedy for the topmost thing, as in all these evidences I've given you. And so anybody who doesn't understand this, doesn't understand his teachings, if they say that he was just interested in big buildings and in collecting a lot of money or something. But if you want the inner meaning, then you have to go to some Vaishnava guru who really has this. That's nonsense. And that was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's mood too. And he didn't separate the two. But you be dynamic from your enthusiasm of wanting to go back to Godhead. Arjuna, do you?
Two sides. One side was, you gave a class a long time ago. You think anyone in ISKCON is going to be really able to get to that stage? This was coming out of me when I heard it. I appreciated it in the sense theory that these are higher stages. And then recently I was thinking about this Japa workshop we did where Mother Narayani was describing all the different stages. And I was thinking, well, that's why I'm not even at this. I find my mind is not just so distracted from enchanting, but I'm just kind of Hare Krishna, just going along, kind of like this, no real effort going into it. And then I was thinking, well, how am I going to get anywhere if I'm not really putting an effort in where it counts? I'm not really trying on a daily basis. And I thought, how am I going, if I just go along, Hare Krishna, I thought, well, I'm not going to get anywhere. What to speak of the higher stages? I mean, sometimes when someone asks me, some of my friends, what about ragging out? I said, you can't even get up out of bed. What are you talking about ragging out? That's kind of funny to me.
Yeah, but I think what you're saying is in favor of trying to reach higher topics, that you have to do it realistically from where you are now. Don't despair or don't be sarcastic towards reaching the upper stages, but on the other hand, don't think that you can get there cheaply. But think, wow, Prabhupada, he wants me to do this. That's what the Hare Krishna movement is about. So therefore, I'm starting from this low level that I'm at now, at least I have to start doing this. Knock down the four pillars of sinful activities and chant Hare Krishna. Radhana.
It seems that actually I'm having a lot of realization in this myself that it's very difficult and long path Krishna consciousness, and it seems that I was just trying to understand as you were talking there, you made a mention of how Prabhupada is actually giving everything, and when you're reading from these books, that's what I'm hearing. I don't think I've got a huge drive to really reach for that. But I feel that is true. But then I wonder, well, why? How do other people not see that? And it seems that I'm just trying to explore some. I'd like to hear what you have to say on this. But I was thinking myself that maybe it's out of people's impatience with the fact that they have their own fallacies and looking to override and ignore those things. They go to something higher, thinking that you know, like Arjuna is saying, somebody might ask about Raganuga, but they're not even getting up out of bed, you know, until 10 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and then they're wondering how come, you know, where's this thing? So, I don't know, I guess I'm just searching for why do we get distracted like that?
I think one reason is that other gurus may give it out more freely than our guru, Prabhupada, and you're saying, why would people think would get restless about it, and they wouldn't, as soon as they hear that somebody is giving out the nectar more freely, then they say, well, let me go. You know, if somebody, if there are two trucks selling ice cream on the street and one is 2 cents and one is 10 cents, well, let's go to the cheap one. But it's not meant to be like that. So Prabhupada is a long, slower process. And they may be impatient. Well, and they may also doubt, having heard different things, they may doubt that Prabhupada can even do it. Or that ISKCON, they may confuse Prabhupada with ISKCON, you know, see all the faults of ISKCON and think, well, Prabhupada, he's connected so much with ISKCON, I will just get the nectar of Radha and Krishna from some persons who talk about it all the time and are not an institution. Oh, there's so many reasons why somebody might want the higher stages and think that this is not the best way to go. But this is like the royal road to going. Especially when you study Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and see that Prabhupada is so carefully following that model. Does that answer your question?
Sort of. I guess I was also seeing, because actually when you made that example of, well, if there were ice cream trucks selling the same ice cream, one for 2p and one for 10p, we're going to sensibly go to the 2p. So what's sensibly going to have me look at what Prabhupada is giving and look at what somebody else is giving and have the intelligence when I do, if I do ever come across that person, to know that actually they might be selling for 2p, but what they're really selling, you know, isn't the right thing. So I guess it seems that, but for reasons of somebody else's own fallacy, they're going to that thinking that that's it, but it's not the real thing. It's, or maybe it's,
well,
not.
Well, I don't want to, that was a crude example, and maybe it doesn't work so well, but it's not really meant, the qualifications are very serious qualifications, and it's not meant to be given out like water. So so one who is doing so is not really doing the best service to qualify the hearers. So I don't know how that fits the ice cream example, but that's why Prabhupada's giving out would be superior to, because so often his talks would be a lot about Vaidhi Bhakti and how to elevate yourself to the basis in Krishna consciousness, but these talks also go further and further. And percentage-wise, another teacher might teach a lot more about Krishna and the gopis, but the training that Prabhupada gives it. Yeah, we're not ready. And he's not expert enough to see that we're not ready.
I think in the term Siddhi Pranali, it's not a term we're very familiar with. We are certainly familiar with the term practice sahaja.
Yeah.
It's definitely a very hot term for Prabhupada. And so recently that the word sahaja, I'm not sure exactly where the root is, but the word means easy.
Yeah.
Like something easy. And I was wondering, what did you actually use that term in your letter recently? I'm not worried, I'm just that somebody's an expression of our attraction to the deity saying, oh, maybe I'm becoming sahaja. So it's a very sensitive to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a very, it's a very relevant thing for devotees that we all know. When we come to Krishna conscious, we're going to make it soon. But they realize, hang on, it's not so easy. So a lot of what we see the devotees go through in the growing up stage, maturing, is realizing, this isn't so easy. So it's kind of one sense, you can say, in an innocent or naive way, when we come, we're practicing sahajas, we think it's going to be really easy. But then we discover, as we begin the process, that this isn't so easy. So that's why maybe one sense, you can see, Prabhupada always said, this isn't easy. And he's always saying, and if you think it's too easy, you'll end up just being disappointed when you find out it's not. And then you'll end up being distracted in some way, or being convinced, no, this is easy, and I want it to be easy. And therefore, maybe that's where, like, an organ expression, they go off and get attracted to something else. They convince it's got to be easy. But the reality seems is every devotee, I think everybody experiences it's just not so, it's not so easy. And that's why I think sincere
devotees... Yeah, the guru's job is to make it accessible, but not too easy. Yeah. Those, the Prahakrita Sahajiyas, they encourage their disciples to go see the dramatic performance of Leela dance, which take place regularly in Vrindavan, where just a male actor, or I don't know, maybe it's a female actor, is done up as Krishna, and there's gopis, and they have rasa dance. And they say, you just go there and try to enter the mood of the different participants, and this will help you to enter the eternal Leela of Krishna. So one of Prabhupada's disciples asked him when he was there, can I go to the Rasa Leela performances? Because they say it will help me to understand Rasa Leela. And Prabhupada said, not until you've actually danced in the Rasa Leela with Krishna can you go to the Rasa Leela. Otherwise, it won't be helpful to you to so-called enter the mood. You'll be entering the mood of material sex. Manu?
The first time I heard about this was in the lecture of instruction. And I think it's around the seventh or eighth verse that a resident of Vrindavan will actually come and explain to you your Leela. But I remember hearing it and it seemed, that's quite, that's very natural and it seems like it's, And I was also thinking about that particular book as well because, I mean, at the end, Radhakund is extremely glorified, I think.
And when we're ready, everything will be ready for us. Okay, I better stop. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.